I'll stand up and sing some songs here. Start with Open the Eyes of My Heart.
Dave Tuckett. But so there's a lot of people here, and you may have talked to someone already this morning, but why don't you go and greet someone that you have not talked to this morning? And take a minute. Just even if it's someone around you, that's great. If you have to move a little bit, let's do that. Good morning. All right, wrap it up. I know we could do like at least 15 minutes of this easy every day, every Sunday. So awesome. Well, I don't have any real announcements except just a little bit of update. The Costa Rica mission team is in the middle of their trip. Actually, they're kind of getting towards the tail end of their trip. The Dubuque, three Dubuque folks that were coming from Dubuque, Iowa, stayed at our house Tuesday night, and then early in the morning, Wednesday, Rebecca drove Maria, Jim, Amy, and the three Dubuque folks to the airport. And the word is everything's going well. We're waiting for Facebook posts every night. I'm like, come on, people, give us something. You know, I'm looking at all their Facebook posts. I'm like, really? No one can post any photos for us here. But I'm sure we're going to see them soon enough, but they've been really working today. You can be praying for them. They're working today. They had a men's meeting with the church, and then because their church service is Saturday night. So this morning was a men's meeting, and then today was their R&R day where they drove to a volcano. They're probably at a volcano, on their way to a volcano by now, and a nice dinner at night. And then tomorrow they hit the ground running again for a full day of ministry before they leave on Tuesday. So keep praying for them. We've been praying for them every day, that the Lord would work through them and in them through this trip. They've been mainly working in slum area near where the church is, and the slum is mostly Nicaraguan refugees. So they've been going house to house and giving away things and sharing the gospel with people. We brought two full suitcases full of kids' clothes that Ruth and others have donated to through the last couple of years, and that was all brought down there. And Indianapolis brought suitcases full of stuff as well, and school supplies. They've also been serving in a school in that slum area. And when we talked to the guys down there and preparing for the trip, Scott said, well, what kinds of things should we bring? Should we bring this? Should we bring this? Should we bring this? And he's like, yes, yes, they have nothing. So anything you bring will... the Lord will use in their lives. So they've been loving on people and sharing the gospel. So continue praying as they've been working in the school and in the slums and on a university campus. So that's our Costa Rica trip. We'll hear more about the trip next Sunday as part of our service. Not the whole service, but a segment we'll give to them to be able to share what went on. Awana launched this week. Great launch. Thanks to everybody that helped out. Give them a big round of applause, all the volunteer leaders. And we had a great group, and they were all just soaking in the word and the gospel, and really a good group of kids, and just be praying for that this year. I think the Lord's really going to use it. got a good group of Cubbies, a good group of Sparks, and a good group of Truth and Training. That's about all I have. We have Darlita and Foster volunteer to continue kind of a more light breakfast as long as we can, where we're not cooking food. But if you notice, there's yogurt and some fruit and some. The Fulmers have a baker that donates pastries for us every, and it's a good bakery. If you've ever been to the Lilac Bakery in Lombard, it's good food, and we get that donated for free. So it's really awesome how the Lord provided that. So feel free to come in and grab a before church, grab a donut or a pastry and a yogurt. Head to the prayer meeting, and we'll just have a great time of fellowship, prayer together before church. That's all I have. So right now we're going to take our offering, and Sunday school kids, you can go, and teachers, you can go to your Sunday school class and enjoy the rest of the service.
Oh, there we go. Now I can see where I am. Good morning, everyone. Are you guys enjoying? You know, it was 88 degrees 2 days ago. Yesterday, it hit 88 degrees, and today, it's a nice day. So I'm enjoying. I like the last few warm, sunny days of summer, because I know that gray Chicago winter is coming somewhere, and I just somehow I feel like I'm getting away with something if I just have a little more warm and enjoy it. So we finished our last series, and we had a nice sharing of celebrating our 30 years of offering ministry as a church here in the Chicagoland area last week, and we're going to continue revisiting that over the next couple weeks. But we are starting a new series about heroes in the Bible, and different people are going to share, and we're looking at aspects of what makes a person a hero, what can we learn, and what does it mean to be a hero in the spiritual world. And so so I was going to put someone on the spot. Let's see. No, I better not. Let's see. We'll try this here. So let's my first question to you is if you had to think of three, get rid of that. Think of three people who are heroes to you. Think of three. And they better not be Marvel characters. Well, maybe they can't be. Anyone willing to share? Anyone who's a hero to them? And I know in church we make it all churchy, but what do you think, Jamie? Yeah. 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 Broke ground in a new way. What do you think? Yeah, well, gosh, I've seen that. What was his name? Drawing a blank on his name. Yeah, that was, what do you think? Yeah, now, I thought the same thing. I thought a hero, to me, is someone who made a huge difference in my life. And so a hero can be someone who impacted you, and no one else may know. But yeah, I thought the same thing. Any other heroes? Yeah. Yeah, Mike Cater. Yeah. I Mike Cater, for his stage of life, ventured off to try something most people don't do, right? Yeah. Stayed in India, preaching there till they imprisoned him. And did that dissuade Mike? No, now he's working in Nepal because he can't go back to India. Yeah. Anyone else you can think of? Come to mind? Well, thank you for sharing. I know So, what makes a person a hero? What makes a person a hero? And I had to think a little more about that, and I'm still digesting that myself as I look. We're going to start looking at Noah and his life a little bit today. Why don't we pray as we can learn together? God, thank you for the example of people who live a life of faith. thank you we can look at that together. Lord, I pray to lay down the distractions, the things we may not be content with. There can be so many things that are hard, things we're struggling with. God, help us to focus on what you're doing, and that you are above all those things, and you will repair all of them. You will rectify and fix all of them, maybe some of them soon, maybe some of them later. But we trust you. Thank you we can be here together. I pray that you help me communicate in a winsome way. Amen. All right. So I looked up the definition of what a hero is. Here we have this. A person admired. There's several definitions, and looking for what applies to us. And we're looking at people, heroic qualities. A person admired for achievements and noble qualities. There are people who have achieved terrible things, but they're not noble. A person we call a hero is a person who has noble qualities, one who shows great courage. Actually, the word encouragement, to encourage someone, the root of that is to add courage to someone's life, to add courage. So that's what a hero is. So I want to look at Noah's life and look at Noah's situation. And we actually don't have a ton of information for the event that happened. It's fairly concise in three chapters compared to Moses. We have tons of information about Moses and conversations with him and Pharaoh. I said this, he said that, they said go away and all those things. But I want to set the stage here for what was happening in Genesis. God had created the world, and sin had entered into the world, and the ability to pursue unrighteousness, and this was the situation in the world. The Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that the attentions and thoughts of his heart was evil continually. So what had happened was people's evil intentions were unfettered. They just had room to go, and people were focused on what they could do and what they could get away with and acting that out and thinking and planning those things all the time. And the Lord regretted that he had made man in the earth, and it grieved him to his heart. So how does God feel about sin? How does God... And people ask this question sometimes. How could God allow this evil thing? Well, you know, it grieves God. Whenever something wrong or evil happens, it grieves him. Here it is. People's evil intentions is grieving to God. So the Lord said, I will blot out man, whom I have created from the face of the earth, man and animals, and creeping things and birds from heavens, for I am sorry that I have made them. He's saying, it is so bad, it has gone so far down the road, I'm sorry that this is just all, that's all there is now, is evil. So, but, there's one guy. Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord. Now, what this favor is, we don't really know. Did he revere God in a unique way? Was he devoted? Did he respect the Lord? Obviously, had to be all those things, but it's not really defined. But Noah found favor in who he was and how he revered who God is. However he did that, found favor with God. So in this is the situation. God says, it's all over. I cannot let this go unchecked, that the judgment of the world is coming. I cannot let it go, and we're going to start over, and I'm going to start with you. This is good news for Noah. If God comes and tells you the first part, it's pretty intimidating. He says, everything will be gone. I will squash all life, and we're going to start over. So, as often is in God having a plan, he had a specific plan. He said, make yourself an ark of gopher wood. Make rooms in the ark. Cover it inside and out. This is how you're to make it. The length of the ark is 300 cubits, breadth 50 cubits, and height 30 cubits. You know, I watched a documentary where they had taken these dimensions, and you know how they have these wave pools at universities where they test models of ships and they scale them down, and they built an ark. They scaled it down to the size of their wave simulator, and they made this ark to this dimension, scaled down, and they said it was an incredibly, these are great dimensions for a vessel to survive a flood. And so God had a specific plan for what Noah was doing, as God often does. He has a specific plan in how things are going to work. Make a roof for the ark, finish it. So he had a specific plan for how Noah was supposed to do this. After that, so Noah builds a boat to save himself and his family. This is God's plan. For behold, I will bring the flood waters upon the earth and destroy all flesh, which is the breath of life under heaven. Everything on the earth will die. This is a hard thing to fathom, that God is right to say that. God is right to say that. It's hard because we like, well, we're pretty good. We're not that bad. We're not bad all the time. It's grievous to God. It was the best thing we owe Noah, and the chance for the world to start over, that he was faithful to God. But he said this to Noah, but I will establish my covenant with you, and you shall come into the ark, you and your sons, your wife, and your sons' wives with you. So I've wondered, you know, so God has this plan, but there's not a lot of miracles happening here aside from the flood. And you can imagine the flood and how this could happen if it rains for a long time. Look at what's happening in North Carolina. How long did they say it was going to rain down there? They said a couple days. The storm's only moving at 3 miles an hour, right? And so it's going very slow, and they're getting between, has anyone heard, 20 inches of rain? But what are they talking about the storm surge? They said the storm surge is going to be over 10 feet. Somehow this works. It can happen very easily. But there's not a lot of miracles here. God didn't build the boat for Noah. Even the food, he wants Noah to go through the process of providing for himself. He's relying on Noah to do certain parts. He didn't say, I'm going to magically, or not magic, but a miracle, feed you guys on the ark. He did that for the Israelites, but he didn't for Noah. He said, take every sort of food that is eaten, store it up. You're going to provide for yourselves. You're going to have several years to do this for you and for them. And Noah did this. He did all that God commanded. I don't know if you ever had a job you get kind of tired of. You know, you kind of hit this middle phase of your life where you're really doing the same thing for a long time. In college, things are changing every semester. You get out of college, you get a job, you do stuff, and you're doing that same process for a long time, maybe 30, 40, 50 years, right? This second phase of life. Noah was building an ark. It doesn't say exactly how long, but if you do the math, it's probably at least 50 years. Between 50 and 70 years of building the ark, gathering the animals, storing up food. What if he said, you know, I'm tired of this job. I want to do something else. Tired of building the ark. Getting kind of old, gathering this gopher wood, sealing up all the joints. Yeah, you know, he didn't check out. I'm done. This was God's plan. He stayed with God's plan until the work was done. Imagine working on one project for 50 years. This was God's plan. Then the rain came. So I skipped some verses in here, but basically, the earth flooded. All life was wiped out except for Noah and his family. And after all this was done, and I'm skipping the whole middle part, this was a long time on the boat, the earth was washed clean. It was washed clean, and there was a new start for all of mankind. Noah and his family got a chance to start over, and he offered a sacrifice to God. That's what verse 22 is. So that is Noah's story. So I want to go back to before the flood came. So Noah has at least 50 years to warn his friends. So think about someone saying this. Everything you know, your neighborhood, your home, your vehicle, all of your distant relatives are going to be gone. It's all going to be new. They're all going to go away. It's just going to be you and your immediate family. That's it. Everything you're familiar with, it's all going to be a new landscape. It's all going away. Everything you take comfort in except for this, you're all going to start over. If you knew that, what would you do? If you knew that was going to happen, what would you do? Everyone you cared about, your next-door neighbor, they're going to be dead. They're going to be gone. Well, Noah, it says in 2 Peter that he warned everyone. Because he warned, actually the ESV says he was a herald. He proclaimed the message of God's coming judgment. And Jesus talked about this in almost every gospel. He said, but in Noah's day, people went on getting married, just doing their normal stuff. They ignored what he said. Here's the verse in Peter. Noah warned the world of God's righteous judgment. He warned them. But they regarded him as that guy, the only guy doing the weird thing, building the boat. So God protected Noah when he destroyed the world of ungodly people in the vast flood. I don't know, you ever wonder if he ever doubted? I wonder if this is ever going to happen. I wonder if he's really right. Maybe everyone else is right. Everyone around me, everyone is saying, what are you talking about? It's never rained. Not like that. Imagine the peer pressure. I think I have a hard time imagining what it takes to be the only one. Even we have a church community to support each other. Imagine being the only person who thinks this, who believes this. And your kids are listening to you. But everyone else, you're the only one. That takes faith. That takes faith in seeing what's really going to happen. And you're the only one. In Hebrews 11:7 is called the Heroes, the Hall of Faith. It praises Noah, the writer of Hebrews. By faith, Noah, being warned by God concerning events yet unseen, in reverent fear constructed the ark for the saving of his household. And by this he condemned the world and became one of the righteous that comes by faith. Because he trusted what God said and followed him, he gave a new start. So, I have a hard time finding a modern-day equivalent of being the only person who did that. And I have some heroes, and I want to draw a parallel here, and I want to draw a parallel, of course, from the United States Space Program. What is it like to be that one person who speaks up and people don't listen? But you're right. So, you know that, and you're probably familiar with the American space program, the Russians were ahead of us in the space program. They put up the first satellite, and the United States raced ahead, and we put a man on the moon. But at that point in the space program, everything was disposable. It was all one use. The whole Saturn V system, they built this big rocket, they used it once, and everything got thrown away. And NASA said, you know, it'd be nice to have a reusable aircraft. And that's where the shuttle program actually started in President Nixon's era, the design of that, how old it was. They designed a reusable system, and the plan was to establish space flight as routine and reuse all the parts. And so that's what happened. The space shuttle came about. And I have a hero from the space shuttle program. We know that we have lost two space shuttles. They've retired the whole program. And I'm going to talk about the Space Shuttle Challenger. Now, sometimes people get them confused. Anyone know what happened to the Challenger? It exploded. Now, interestingly, actually, can we put up the first video? Now, the Space Shuttle, Sorry, I'm getting a little technical here. So the space shuttle has two solid rocket boosters. Now, you can't shut a solid rocket booster off. Once you start, it has to burn all the fuel. And the contract with the guy who did this is Morton Thiokol. And because they're in Utah, it has to be made in pieces. They ship the pieces by rail, and they put them together. And so this is the joint. Play this video. This is going to be important as to what happened. Can we play this video?
There was a groove which the O-ring, both the primary and the secondary O-rings, fit in those grooves. And there was a little flange and tang that they came together. And in order to stop the gas from going around and escaping, when the initial bit of gas hit the first primary O-ring, that pressure would push the O-ring into the little space between the flange and the tang, and that would make the seal. In other words, the O-ring was not in a sealing configuration when it was just sitting statically on the launch pad. It has to move dynamically at the moment of ignition to be able to make the seal. And the requirement for it to move quickly is why it was dependent on temperature, because lower temperatures, less flexibility, and not so rapid reconfiguration of the O-ring.
All right. So I have a hero in this program. So we know that Space Shuttle Challenger, what happened was, is those O-rings failed. And because of the design of the whole system, the way it's supposed to work is the gas is supposed to, it's actually 1,000 PSI, is pressed on this little piece of rubber and squash it in, and it's all supposed to keep it inside the booster rocket. And so this guy took a job with Morton Thiokol. His name was Roger Beaujolais. And a year before the shuttle accident, they had noticed the coldest flight they had ever flown was about 53 degrees. Normally it's warm in Florida, but sometimes on a few days it's not. And they had noticed, Roger Beaujolais is the seal expert. He goes and takes pictures of the seals. And he says, how do we do? Because they get all the parts back. And he goes, wow, this O-ring is burned up. And as a matter of fact, the gas has eroded all the metal. And he said, and the second seal is a backup. He says, we almost had an accident here. And for a year, he had been asking for people to look at this. He says, you know, this is not the safest system we've come up with. It's not the safest system. And he's been asking for a year, and then this Challenger mission comes up, and there's a bunch of delays, and NASA wants to get the launch because it's a very public event off. There's a school teacher on this shuttle mission, and it's been delay after delay, and the next morning it's going to be 30 degrees. Now, no one knew this before it happened. I mean, the public didn't know it. We didn't know it. And so they've reenacted this. I just find it fascinating. So this is a little segment of, actually, the whole show is on YouTube. It's about an hour and a half long. I just find it just fascinating. But there's peer pressure here of the engineers talking with the managers. And what happened was NASA was bidding out the next contract, which is worth about $1 billion. And Thiokol had just said, we're not comfortable launching at these temperatures. And NASA said, you guys need to think about your launch. You're telling us, you're defining new launch criteria, and you have no way to say it's not going to work. You have no data at this temperature. How can you say it's not going to work? So I got this next video, which is a reenactment, but this is a reenactment of what happened, which is a few minutes long. Let's watch this next one, what happened here.
At this point, Senior Vice President Gerald Mason intervenes.
Jill, ask him if he can take a five-minute caucus offline.
Larry, could we take 5 minutes?
We have to make a management decision. Let's look over the data again and consider Larry Malloy's points.
Now, if we launch at the predicted temperatures, we are out of our experience base. Even if we take 40 degrees as the temperature floor, we are still way out of our database. In launching at these low temperatures, we are moving away from goodness.
We're covering the same ground again. We're just spinning our wheels.
To the engineers' dismay, the managers ignore them and hold a private conversation. The 5 minutes soon stretches into half an hour. It's clear the managers are changing their minds. Thompson makes a last-ditch effort to stop the launch.
And during this so-called private meeting, while we're offline, I could hear and see the way it was going. And I did something I probably would never do again, even. I picked up all my charts and went up to the middle of the table because there was a vacant chair there. And I went through the whole thing, or, you know, as much as I felt I had time. And the resiliency data and some of the other things, they're associated with it. And my worried about flying even at room temperature. Finally, I looked up at Jerry's face, and that was pretty grim. I just went back to my desk, resolved that, you know, it's going to fly, and nothing I could do about it.
I am so angry and so mad and so frustrated that I slammed the photographs down and I'm screaming at them because I saw what they did to Arnie, to look at the photographs and not avoid what they're telling us. It's very simple, guys. The lower the temperature, the more hot gas gets past the joint, as you see in this photograph of the January 1985 flight. I got the same identical treatment as Arnie got. And so I angrily picked up the photographs and returned to my position at the table. And I basically put my head down on my arms and I was so close to losing it.
Let's take a vote. Do we recommend a launch? Joe?
Every stinking piece of data we had, 14 charts, one of which was the title page, pointed to a reason not to launch. You can't launch with this data. It's impossible.
I think it's all right.
The vice president of engineering is on the fence, and now he's being pressured to change his mind.
Bob, you have to take off your engineering hat and put on your management hat.
Hello, Kennedy? Marshall?
Yeah. I hear you, Joe.
Marshall here. Our position is that although temperature effects are a concern, the data predicting blow-by are inconclusive.
Now, are there any disagreements or any other comments concerning the Thiokol recommendation?
Pressure is intense. No one raises any objections, not even Beaujolais. At NASA, the silence means go for launch.
Well, when you're in a meeting like that, and the question is posed whether anybody disagrees with the decision to launch, and nobody disagrees, then that means that everybody agrees. If anybody had been against launching, they should have spoken up. Since they didn't, they tacitly agreed to launch. And I don't care what they say today and what they've been saying for the last 20 years, they agreed to launch.
The probability of failure, you know, was there. But they hadn't failed yet. So it's easy to say, once you failed, why didn't you do this or didn't do that? But I guess my feelings were, and I hadn't thought about it, but that, you know, I had said what I had to say to my management, and that's where it maybe should end. You know, an afterthought, you know, maybe I should have got up and screamed better.
They had 6 months to prepare, and they didn't, and they tried to do it in an hour. And I really regret the decision being made. But given the data that we had and what we knew, I think we made the right engineering decision.
When I opened the door from the garage to my house in Willard, the first thing that my wife said to me is, "What's wrong?" I said, "Oh, nothing, honey." I said, "I had a great day." But I says, it ended up in a meeting. I says, "We're going to launch tomorrow and kill the astronauts." But outside of that, it was a great day.
Sorry, I can get pretty absorbed in this. So here's a guy who knew. Now, I didn't realize that. I knew this Challenger blew up, but it turns out that he had been trying to get attention on this issue for over a year. And he was shut down. He was shut down because people said, it's not an issue. It hasn't blown up before. You can't prove it's going to blow up, which is really opposite of what NASA had always done, is if we can prove that it's safe, then we'll go. And they moved to, if you can't prove that it's dangerous, we'll go because we're under a lot of pressure. And so the story goes on, but Roger Beaujolais tried as best he could to speak up for the truth. So what does a hero do? What does a hero do? So one of the things, to be a hero, you have to see a picture of the future. You have to see something. So Noah listened to God, and God says, this is going to happen, and he acted in accordance with that. Roger Beaujolais said, this is a great risk, and he was the only one who could see that. He was the SEAL engineer. He saw it better than everyone. He was the most vocal, and he was ignored. But he's saying, this is a problem. This is a problem. You have to see the future. You have to act to change the future. You have to act in a way that can be different. That if you stay home, I'm not going to build the boat. And the other engineer said that. He said, well, you know, I said what I had to say, and then I went and sat down to my management. And he said, well, maybe that was the wrong thing to go and sit down. He says it now after the consequences are there. So the reality is, if you're going to take a risk for God, you need to be able to take risk for a better outcome. You know, sometimes it goes our way. Sometimes God works that out. Sometimes it doesn't. You know, Roger Beaujolais suffered greatly for this. President Reagan enacted a commission to find out what happened, and it came out that Roger Beaujolais was warning people for years. And the lawyers for Thiokol said, don't offer any extra information. And he said, no, I'm going to speak up. And he offered the truth. And you know what? He couldn't get a job after that. He was seen as a problem employee. Couldn't get a job in engineering, and actually had a nervous breakdown. It bothered him so much what he knew. He did the right thing. So sometimes you benefit, sometimes you suffer. You can't predict what that's going to be in the moment. You know, being a hero does not feel like being a hero in the moment. Noah built an ark for 50 to 70 years. He obeyed God for 50 to 70 years. You know, can you imagine building and working on something. I'm a hero today. I'm going to go be a hero. I don't think being a hero does not feel like it. We can look afterwards and see, but it rarely feels like being a hero in the moment. So what does this mean for us? What does this mean for us in that, how can God use us in the spiritual world? So for you, one of the things we need to do is grow in conviction about the truth in the future of what God says. We need to know it intimately and confidently when we can grow in that. That's the neat thing about the spiritual life, is that if you invest time with the Lord and what He says and what He promises, it grows in your life. The importance of that, and because you need, because you'll get fatigued if you don't have that, and you'll give up. Well, I'm tired of building the ark. I'm tired of talking to these people about the risk. If you're going to take risks that the Lord can use in the future, you are going to sacrifice something of today. If Noah said, I want to be like my neighbors, I want to live like my neighbors and not have this pressure of this big project, nothing would have happened. No one would have been saved. So one of my hopes, one of our hopes, is that for my life, is that I can live in a way that gives everyone the best chance to be in the boat. You know, I'm going to go back to 2 Peter here. This is the verse before. 2 Peter 5 is where he talks about Noah. In verse 3, oops, this is 1 Peter. For God did not spare the angels when they sinned, but cast them into hell and connected them to change of gloomy darkness to be kept until the judgment. If He did not spare the ancient world, but preserved Noah, a herald of righteousness. He said the judgment, God did not spare the ancient world. Peter's message is the judgment is coming. Now, Roger Beaujolais was concerned for the astronauts, their lives at risk. If we're honest about how this works, the judgment of God is coming, and we know people. We're friends with them. And if we're going to live for that, if we're going to live to warn people and be like Noah, some people will call us hero one day for standing up and learning how to do that. Why don't we pray, and we'll have the music team come up. God, thank you for blessing us. Thank you for Noah's example of being obedient for years and to live a life of faith. Help us to be comfortable being a herald and being speaking out for you, even if it's not popular, even if we're not rewarded in the moment. Amen.